Tatsyam within her. Ajanayat. He begot putran sons. Paranjanyam him in Paranjani. Paranjanaha, King Paranjana. Shatani, hundreds. Ekadasha, 11. Virat, O King. Ayushaha, of life. Ardham, half. Ata, in this way. Atyagat, he passed. Translation, the great sage Narada then addressed King Prachinibharishat. O one whose lifespan is great, Virat. In this way, King Puranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Paranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. So you can repeat the great sage Narada. Then addressed King Prachinabharishat. A one whose lifespan is great, Virat. In this way, King Paranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Paranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. In this verse, there are several significant words, the first of which are Ekadasha Shatani. Paranjana had begotten 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, and thus passed away half of his life. Actually, every man follows a similar process. If one lives for 100 years at the utmost, in his family life he simply begets children up to the age of 50. Unfortunately, at the present moment, people do not live even 100 years. Nonetheless, they beget children up to the age of 60. Another point is that formerly people used to beget 100 to 200 sons and daughters. As will be evident from the next verse, King Paranjana not only begot 1,100 sons, but also 110 daughters. At the present moment, no one can produce such huge quantities of children. Instead, mankind is very busy checking the increase of population by contraceptive methods. We do not find in Vedic literatures that they ever use contraceptive methods, although they were begetting hundreds of children. Checking population by contraceptive method is another sinful activity, but in this age of Kali, people have become so sinful that they do not care for the resultant reactions of their sinful lives. King Paranjana lay down with his wife Paranjani and begot a large number of children, and there is no mention in these verses that he used contraceptive methods. According to the Vedic scriptures, the contraceptive method should be restraint in sex life. It is not that one should indulge in unrestricted sex life and avoid children by using some method to check pregnancy. If a man is in good consciousness, he consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation with intelligence, one advances in his ability to estimate the value of life. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good, conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing in Krishna consciousness and not for begetting a large number of children. Children are called parinama, or byproducts. And when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproduct should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. Interesting. So, all right. So, tasyam ajanihat putran Paranjanyam Paranjanaha Shatan Yukadasha Virat Ayushordam Atachyagat. So, let's see. Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in the last verse and some of the other verses, one might get the impression that married life is just for gross enjoyment. I mean, that's sometimes the impression that's given and by people giving class, especially someone who's giving a brahmachari class or something like that. But in married life, as we're hearing here, and then the next verse, there's many different needs of the living entity that are fulfilled. It's not only the gross enjoyment. That's just one of the needs. And I was thinking about this. You know, why do people get married? Of course, sometimes people in the brahmachari ashram, they've been brahmacharis so long that, you know, their just sensual enjoyment just overcomes the conception of sensual enjoyment just overcomes them, and then they just get married to the first girl because they've been celibate for so long that anyone looks beautiful to them. That happens. I mean, that's a problem previously in ISKCON. I don't think it's a problem so much right now, that people are kept artificially, you know, either celibate or artificially away from the opposite sex. And basically, when you keep someone away from something, it's called the forbidden fruit. You've heard of the forbidden fruit? That refers back to the Adam and Eve metaphor in the Bible, where the apple was the forbidden fruit. And something that's forbidden, you really want to do, right? And we see this sometimes in not only in Krishna consciousness or in our movement. I don't want to say Krishna consciousness, but sometimes you have like all boys' school or all girls' school, because something's so forbidden, it becomes even more attractive, right? Like if I say to you, there's one particular type of food that is so delicious, Manohara Laddu, for example. Manohara Laddu is called Manohara Laddu because it steals the mind. You know, Manohara. So, Madhumango like Manohara Laddus, and of course Krishna does also. And Radharani makes the Manohara Laddus. So I'm going to tell you about this Laddu. I said, but you're not allowed to have any, but, you know, I have this whole container of Manohara Laddus, and you're not permitted to take any of them. Then all day long you're going to be thinking of them because it's forbidden. So sometimes, and this comes previously at least, there's so much heavy preaching about, you know, the sex life and don't look at a woman. And so it's like people are thinking of it even more. You know, something that's forbidden you think of even more. But let's talk about in a normal society. In a normal society, people get married for more reasons than just enjoying the senses, enjoying the genitals, for example. There's many, many reasons. And I was thinking, actually, I wrote down some of those reasons. And the reasons for men and getting married, the reason for women getting married, are sometimes different and sometimes the same. For example, a man, he gets married because one reason, amongst many, is that he wants to dominate. Ishwaroham aham bhogi siroham balavan sukhi. He wants to be an Ishwara, as Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, about the demoniac consciousness, what? Ishwaraham, I am the controller, ham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Siroham, I'm perfect. Balavan, I'm happy. Sukhi, I'm happy. That's what Balavan means, powerful. And Sukhi, I'm happy. So there's this whole desire to basically be Krishna. You know, a man wants to be, what, the king of his house. The house is his castle. You ever hear about that before? The house is a man's castle. And so it's his place. So that's one big reason why a man wants to get married. Let's go back and forth between men and women. I don't want to just, like, bash men or bash women. So perhaps the primary reason that women want to get married is the desire for security. You know, security, of course, means safety, shelter, all these things like that, because, you know, it's a dangerous world, and then all the men are just like on the prowl. It's very so you need some security. So that's why the lady sometimes is attracted by the long arms of the man who gives security. No, you missed the first part. Anyway, we're describing, it's good for you to hear, describing the reasons why people want to get married. Not just the sensual enjoyment. Just to reiterate, because I didn't want her to miss the first part. The man wants to get married to dominate, to be the Ishwara, and the woman wants the security. So let's go back to the man again. I'm going to go back and forth, you know, alternate. So another reason the man wants to get married is he wants service. He wants a servant. Of course, that's part of the domination thing, too. Like he wants someone to do his laundry. It's interesting. I was just speaking to someone who got married, and he said as soon as he got married, he ended up doing his own laundry and sometimes his wife's laundry, too. So he wants someone to cook for him. You know, there's a certain satisfaction when you have someone serving you like that. And, all right, so that's the man. Food, laundry, someone just like to be at his beck and call all the time. And so let's get back to the women. The women, they want children. And, of course, the children is not a specific need, but the children fulfill needs for the women, like the need for love, affection, and not only the object to love, but someone or something that reciprocates that specific type of love. I mean, because it's very hard. I mean, you could love so many things, but to actually have someone reciprocate or appreciate or just look at you as their all in all, and that's children do that with the mother, at least for the first 2 years. So it fulfills that need, you know, someone's just looking at you, you're everything to me. You know, they just identify with the parent. And that's why, in many cases, when the ladies don't get married, whatever, they usually get pets. I've seen that, you know, whether it's a pet tarantula, or, you know, obviously not a pet tarantula, but whether it's a pet cat or a dog, or even I've seen some young ladies, before they get married, they get pets too. Or dolls, you know, little dolls that they can hug, and the dolls are just like with these little big eyes, not little eyes, big eyes, looking at them, right? And, I mean, I know one young girl who just got fish in her home, and then she's feeding the fish and everything like that, and just giving so much love to the fish. I don't know how much the fish reciprocate, but at least they don't go to sleep during Bhagavatam class. Because they always keep their eyes open. They don't have eyelids. Okay, so let's go back. So that's another purpose of married life. Another purpose of married life, or let's go back to men again. It gives them a purpose in life. And that's actually men and women. It gives them a purpose in life. Because otherwise, I mean, you're just there eating, and there's no reason to get a job. There's no reason to do anything unless you're married, right? You just sit there. I mean, you get drunk or something like that. Remain completely in the mode of ignorance. Because one in the mode of ignorance doesn't have a purpose in life. One in the mode of passion and goodness has a purpose. And goodness, your purpose is either self-realization, becoming liberated, understand Krishna. And in passion, your purpose is to increase your wealth, your prestige, your loving exchanges, or people appreciate you. So it actually solidifies, it actually keeps society going. Like they say, love makes the world go round, and Srila Prabhupada would say that sex life is the impetus for economic development. And he was quoting one particular English economist, something Marshall or something like that, that sex life is the impetus. So it gives both people a purpose. Otherwise, you know, what am I doing? You know, what am I going to college for? Or what am I working for? Or what am I cleaning the house for, even? nothing, isn't it? And then you just become depressed, right? So it gives you a purpose in life, okay? And then let's go to the women's side again. So the women have a need for more material goods like jewelry and saris and everything. So the man, he supplies those things. So that also is part of security and love. You know, the one feels their love. It's a symptom of love, like the saris. My husband brought me a diamond, or at least a cubic zirconium, which is an imitation diamond, or a watch, or a brooch, or anything. It's just like either Valentine's Day or someone's birthday. Like, you see, what happens if it happens to be your birthday or anniversary and the husband doesn't do anything, the wife will just get very depressed. And she'll start crying, and the poor man can't figure out what's happening. And he says, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Don't you remember?" And he's thinking, "What am I supposed to remember?" Of course, the man doesn't remember these dates. Like the date. I speak to many, many men, and usually they don't remember the year they got married, what to speak of the day they got married. But the woman remembers the exact moment that she got married, exact second. So, okay, so that's another purpose that marriage fulfills for people. Another purpose it fulfills, as far as having the children, it gives you a sense of eternity. You know, like we want eternity, bliss, knowledge, you know, Satchitananda. So having children and, you know, it's carrying out the family dynasty. You know, things will go on after I die, at least. Because if you don't have children, if you don't have progeny, then what will happen after you die? It's all finished. You know, your genes aren't continuing, right? Finished, right there. Just finished. Horrible, isn't it? So it gives you a sense of eternity, you know, continuing, which is, you know, of course the soul is eternal, but people don't realize that. And we already mentioned both men and women want to be loved and love something. So that's a natural propensity. It also gives both men and women fulfills the need for autonomy, because previously they were with their parents, and it gives them their own particular space, you know, their own control of their own lives. Another thing is it gives them a social network. You know, these are all the pluses in marriage. So it sounds like I'm preaching on behalf of marriage. Anyway, so it gives people a social network. Because, I mean, basically, all your friends have gotten married, and you're just, like, left there alone, you know, the poor guy without any friends, or the poor girl without any friends. And what do you talk about? You know, you meet with the other ladies, and the other ladies say, you talk about their husband and their children, and you're just there. What are you going to talk about? Your job, you know, you're a psychiatrist. And you analyze some crazy people the other day, you know. Because when you're older, you talk about your operations. Isn't it? You just pull up your shirt and you show the scar from your heart operation or from your, kidney operation, whatever operation you have. But when you're in the middle portion of life, like from 20 to 50, you talk about your family. So you really have no place in society unless you're married, right? I mean, what is your social network? It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because everybody else is married. And then another big reason why people get married, at least in the Vedic system, is to satisfy their parents. Now, I know this because I work with a lot of people in India and also Fiji and other places like that, and the parents just insist, they force the person to get married, even if the person doesn't want to get married. And even if the person doesn't want to get married to a particular individual, they force the person to marry to a particular individual. So it's to satisfy the parents. And in addition, to satisfy the forefathers, there's this whole system that the offspring, the putra or putri, that is the son or daughter, they perform this pinda to keep the parents in pitri loka, or keep the parents in a good situation, or the forefathers in a good situation. Anyway, so these are some of the reasons why people get married. So it's not only the gross sensual enjoyment. So we don't want to think simplistically about marriage. However, now we get to the sannyasi part. So all these needs can be fulfilled very nicely in Krishna consciousness. Now, I'm not saying people shouldn't get married. It may be a good strategy for particular individuals to get married. That's fine. But ultimately, if we want to fulfill these needs in a real sense, I mean, for example, the need for love and be loved, that love can be, that need can be fulfilled in relationship to Krishna and his holy names. I remember Srila Prabhupada said that we have a loving propensity. And, of course, Prabhupada said, if you don't love G-O-D, you'll love D-O-G. You know, that was another statement Prabhupada made. So we have a loving propensity, and we want this loving propensity to be expressed unlimitedly. So we have this expectation in our material relationships, not only the relationship between husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, but also between friends, between person and their pet, and or person or a mother and a son. We have this relationship, we have this expectation, this unrealistic expectation, that the loving propensity is going to be fulfilled in an unlimited fashion. But we're soon frustrated. Take the example of my mother. She became, you know, she wanted me just to fulfill her loving propensity, and she still does. And she's continually frustrated in that attempt, because I don't always cooperate, or usually cooperate, or I never cooperate. So instead, had she focused on Krishna, then it's not that Krishna cooperates either, but at least Krishna reciprocates in a loving fashion with us all the time. You know, an unlimited. I mean, how much love can you give in exchange with your pet? I mean, you can go up to your pet dog and kiss it, or it can lick you, or whatever. But this, it's just like, you can't do it all day long. You can't chant 64 rounds of your pet's name. You know, spend 8 hours a day with your pet, just like, you know, 64 rounds is 8 hours. I mean, you'll just be completely morose. You know, the pet will get tired of you, and you'll get tired of the pet. Right? I mean, your dog may love you so much that it brings your newspaper to you, but then not all day long. You know, he goes to sleep, he has his own life, right? So Krishna, you know, so the loving, as far as the loving propensity, that can be absolutely fulfilled by Krishna consciousness, by giving our heart to Krishna. Krishna continually reciprocates back and forth. And you can be with him you are with him 24 hours a day. Can you imagine a lover that you're with 24 hours a day and you're not sick of them? It's unimaginable in this world. But Krishna, you're with 24 hours a day, you never get sick of him. It just gets nicer and nicer. Like Prabhupada said, the loving propensity can expand unlimitedly. So that's one thing. And then, of course, the need for autonomy can be perfectly realized in Krishna consciousness. Because one becomes autonomous, that means free from the control of the material energy, and able to interact with Krishna according to one's free will, not being controlled by anything except for one's own love. That's real autonomy. And then as far as helping your forefathers, Krishna consciousness is the best way to help your forefathers. Because it's not dependent simply upon the performance of pinda for some limited time. If you just once chant the holy name, even Nama Bash, all your forefathers get liberated. So all these different needs, you know, just looking at all these different needs we have listed here, love, autonomy, friends. You have friends, you know, devotee friends who actually are interested in your spiritual welfare, not just I scratch your back, you scratch my back type of relationship. So all these needs, and so what to speak of security, you know, Krishna is providing nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahonam yovadadati kamam. Krishna is providing all of our needs, all of our security, all of our protection since time immemorial. So all these needs can be perfectly fulfilled in relationship to Krishna. I'm not saying people shouldn't get married, don't get me wrong. But we should understand the needs that are the impetus for someone getting married can be fulfilled in relationship to Krishna perfectly. That's the point I'm making. And even like the need for children. All right, so let's say one has a need for children, offspring. One can preach Krishna consciousness and bring people up in Krishna consciousness. It's so satisfying. It's so satisfying to see someone become Krishna conscious, to bring them up and have them go back to home, back to God. And then the children save the parents, the spiritual children save the parents or save the person who preaches to them or save the guru. So in this, all these different needs. So really, you're really satisfied and fulfilled in Krishna consciousness. And even, of course, we take the need for gross sense gratification. That's actually not a need. You're satisfying your spiritual senses. You're identifying, as we mentioned yesterday, with your spiritual relationship with Krishna. So the gross sense of gratification is not so important anymore. So basically, you're satisfied, you're fulfilled, whether you're married or not, if you're Krishna conscious. But many times, we think that we need to be in a particular situation to be satisfied and fulfilled. It's not a necessity. There are other strategies, particularly the strategy of Krishna consciousness, that fulfills all needs. And we have to have that faith. That is spoken by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that one should have faith by executing Krishna consciousness. All the needs, necessities are fulfilled. So it's very, very important. Of course, just to reiterate, I'm not saying that people shouldn't get married. All I'm saying is that the best strategy for fulfilling all these needs that people have that are an impetus for getting married is Krishna consciousness. Okay? So any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah.
And so how do you do it within the
grahastha ashram? Grahastha ashram. You understand that Krishna is the one who's fulfilling the needs of folk. Even in the grahastha ashram, you don't look at the other person as your need-fulfilling object. The other person will experience that as a demand anyway. You know, your business is to fulfill my need for love. Your business is to fulfill my need for domination. You know, what a horrible relationship that would be. But if you're both serving each other to serve Krishna, and in this way Krishna is fulfilling your needs, then you'll have a very stable, nice, loving relationship. And it won't be based upon how much satisfaction or how much you fulfill my needs, or the person fulfills your needs, or you fulfill the other person's needs. Otherwise, if it's based upon mutual need satisfaction, then after a while, people may look to someone else to fulfill their particular needs. And there may be a disloyalty or unchastity, if I can coin a word, in a marriage situation. If both people are looking to Krishna to fulfill their needs, and it's a spiritual partnership, that's a perfect marriage. But if you just look at the other, you're the wife, your business is to fulfill my need for food. Cook for me, or iron my clothes, or make money for me, or maintain me. You know, it's just like an unpleasant type of relationship. You know, real love between husband and wife is they're both helping each other come closer to Krishna. Okay? But the main thing is, whether one is married, whether one is not married, one can be happy understanding that Krishna is the fulfiller of all the needs, or the relationship with Krishna fulfills all the basic needs that we have. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I was wondering if you would go back over autonomy, because you said we would become become autonomous or free from material energy, and then
actually, the only way to become autonomous is to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, you're controlled by your senses and your mind. Manakshastani indriyani prakritishtani karshati. So if you really want to be controlled by yourself, by your soul, rather than this external energy, rather than by your tongue or genitals or belly, you know, like that. And sometimes the belly gets very strong too. You know, I was just the other day, I came back from traveling, and I don't eat very much when I'm traveling in the plane. That helps with the jet lag, but not eating very much. So my stomach was just like really hungry. It was talking even. You know, stomachs talk. And I need to eat. So it really gets strong sometimes. Especially when you haven't eaten for a while. You really get strong. And then I had to really control myself with this thinking, no, you need to feed Krishna. And Krishna lets you eat. You know, don't think about eating while you're feeding Krishna. Don't think about what Krishna's going to leave over for you. So it takes a lot of endeavor. But there's a feeling of freedom when one's able to do that. When one's able to just like overcome or transcend the impulses of the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words, you actually feel wonderful. I mean, it increases your sense of self-esteem too. Mm-hmm. So, wow, I was able to do that. You know, just like winning the some sort of sports event or something like that. You feel really good. So that's a sense of autonomy, the sense of independence. Unless one, like Paranjani here, was definitely not autonomous. He was controlled by Paranjani and was controlled by all the desires he had. And he was just like a marionette or a puppet being controlled by a puppeteer. So we're like that. Like the guna, in addition to meaning modes of nature, means ropes. So these gunas, these three gunas, goodness, passion, and ignorance, control us and force us to act in different ways, just like a marionette or a puppet is controlled by the strings from above. So that when we cut those strings, we feel really happy. So Krishna consciousness gives us that ability to cut those strings and feel free again. Just like that song. What about free again? It's like the wind blows or something like that. Isn't it? So, but to be controlled by all these desires, oh, it's like being in jail, basically. Okay, on that note, it's time to greet the deities. All glorious to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai.